You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
This morning, Oscar Perez talked to Green Party co-leader and Minister for Climate Change, James Shaw. They discussed gun control and laws, carbon sequestration and trees. But first they started by talking about the rise in the minimum wage.
Today marks the increase of the minimum wage as well as superannuation, which I believe the Greens have long campaigned for. Why have you guys shown general support for this, and what changes are actually happening today?
So today is actually the largest increase ever in the minimum wage, and it's part of a multi-year program to get the minimum wage up to $20 an hour, which is starting to approximate the living wage. And that's why we've campaigned for it for so long, because at the moment, people can't actually afford to live on the minimum wage. And so we've been campaigning to get it up to a level where people can live on it.
Have there been any reasons for why it's been kept at perhaps what isn't a livable wage?
Well, yes, though I don't agree with those reasons. You know, essentially paying people less means that companies are able to keep prices down for the rest of us. Now, I would argue that the people who are buying those goods and services can afford to pay the incremental increase, and that actually it's more important that our people can afford to live on what they're paid than that kind of fairly marginal difference in terms of the cost of, you know, for example, a marginal increase in the cost of a night out at a restaurant.
Certainly. I think some people as well have complained that a rise in the minimum wage will negatively affect small businesses. Do you think that there is anything to say to this, and is there anything that will legally come into place as well that may quell such fears, whether they are rational or not?
Yeah, look, there are some small businesses that are affected, especially those in hospitality and, you know, the restaurant trade. And, you know, that is a very difficult business, even at the best of times. But that's why we're increasing the minimum wage slowly. So we're doing it over the course of several years, which means that those increases, you know, in the cost of business that will then get passed on to customers are sort of much more absorbable.
So you've hinted at that you're after a higher raise. So do you think that this rise now is large enough, or do you think it is perfectly suitable for, as you say, an incremental shift upwards?
Well, it is an incremental shift upwards. So the coalition government has got a plan over the course of 3 or 4 years to increase the minimum wage up to $20 an hour. And so this is a sort of a midway step for us, but it is the largest of the increments. So it's good. It'll make a difference of about $48 a week to about 200,000 people. And if you're a minimum wage worker, then 48 bucks a week, it will make a pretty significant difference in your ability to afford things like rent and food and power and so on.
Indeed it will. Will there also be a raise in the baseline of benefits to match the level of now financial income, which we understand to be necessary, as shown in the raise of the minimum wage?
Well, that's really what the welfare working group was all about, was to say, you know, it was a fairly extensive piece of work over the course of the last year to say, well, you know, okay, so you can help people to live on what they earn, but for people who aren't earning, you know, what do you do about them? And so the government's considering those recommendations at the moment. They were fairly substantive.
Right. Moving on to the next topic for this morning. You have made a huge emphasis on your social media, from what I've seen, of the support that you and the general public has for changing gun laws. There's been a petition that I believe you helped present of near 70,000 signatories. A, what does this petition show, and B, what was included in this petition?
Well, so there were actually three petitions. So one of the things that happened after the Christchurch massacre was a number of individuals or groups of individuals, you know, put up online petitions through Action Station and other platforms. And then we combined those last week to bring them together. And they cover a range of things. The primary thing was they were asking Parliament to get rid of military-style semi-automatic weapons of the type that were used in the Christchurch mass murder. And there was another one that was about a ban on advertising for guns as well. And so we've obviously moved very quickly on the first of those, which is we'll be introducing legislation into the House this week to get rid of semi-automatic weapons. And we are considering over a slightly longer period a range of other measures, like a ban on advertising.
Are these the kind of changes in gun laws that you'd like to see or see necessary, or do you think there are other things that we could also potentially be adding to legislative changes?
Well, these things absolutely are important and necessary, and I'm really pleased at how fast we're moving to finally outlaw these semi-automatic weapons. There are a range of other measures, most of which were actually outlined in a 2017 Select Committee report that my colleague at the time, a Green MP called David Clendon, was instrumental in getting over the line. And so we will be basically suggesting, you know, that is a really good place to start in terms of other measures as well.
Just going back to that report that you talked about before in the 2017 one, why wasn't that discussed more or to a greater length? Were we not perhaps ready for the guns conversation then?
Yeah, look, Parliament has, I mean, it's been said previously in the last couple of weeks that Parliament over the course of the last 20 or 30 years has had about three different goes at reforming our gun laws. The first of which was after the Arimoana massacre back in the, I think that was the early 1990s, and we failed to do so as a country. And so very sadly, what it has taken is the mass murder in Christchurch to give Parliament the kind of kick in the pants act to do what frankly should have been done some years ago.
Do you have anything to say to those who perhaps suggest that restrictive gun laws only aids this idea of the state's monopoly on violence, i.e. referring to, I assume, the control of the police force and military and prison system?
Well, the evidence doesn't seem to support that.
Finally, our last kind of topic for today, trees and carbon sequestration. So last week you said that the government wouldn't change the way forestry is used to offset carbon dioxide emissions in the short term, despite the advice from the Parliamentary Commissioner. A, what was the advice from the Parliamentary Commissioner? And B, why was this your response or Parliament's response?
Well, so the Parliamentary Commissioner's report is a very good and very well considered and very scientifically grounded piece of work. And there are a number of recommendations in it, but one of the big things that he was saying is that a decision that was made in the 1990s to allow people to plant forests to offset their carbon dioxide emissions was actually a mistake, and we shouldn't have done it, because what it allowed was for people to continue polluting and then simply use trees as an offset. And the problem is that carbon dioxide stays in the atmosphere for hundreds of years and up to thousands of years. And if you plant a tree, then it stores the carbon for the lifetime of that tree, but then ultimately the tree is, you know, kind of cut down or it dies. And it actually releases that CO2 back into the atmosphere as it decomposes or if it's burned. And so he's saying all trees do is give you a very short-term kind of window, if you like, where you can buy yourself time, but you still actually, you know, he very correctly said the thing that we really need to focus on is bringing down our actual emissions. He's completely right about that. The reason why we said that we won't be accepting that recommendation in the short term, there are two reasons for that. One of which is that because we are so short of time to fix climate change, actually right now trees are, we actually need that kind of, that purchase of time, if you like, through the use of forestry to give ourselves a couple of decades to bring down our greenhouse gas emissions. But we also need to do, we need to fix our emissions trading scheme and a bunch of other things in the economy to actually do that.
The second
reason is that what he's suggesting is a wholesale reform of the entire emissions trading scheme. And we're actually currently at the end of a four-year process to do exactly that, but on different principles than what the PCE is recommending. If we were to accept his recommendations now, we would probably need to go through about another 2 to 3 years worth of work, and it would kind of defer our policy program. So we're going to do the fixes that we've been working on for the past couple of years, and that's going to happen this year, and then we'll consider the implications of the PCE report after that.
Right, so the planting of trees to offset carbon emissions is essentially a band-aid that we still need to, or band-aid solution that we still need to apply to our kind of deeper injury that is carbon emissions. So you said you're about to introduce fixes or ideas that you've been working on. What are those kind of ideas or fixes?
Well, there's a huge raft of them, many of which are very technical in nature, but there's a few really key important ones. So our emissions trading scheme is what is called a cap and trade, except the problem that we've had is for the last 10 years or more that we've had the program is that there's been no cap. So people have been allowed to trade, but actually our emissions have been allowed to increase over time. And so what we're doing is we're increasing a sort of a total volume of pollution that the country is allowed to emit, and then companies have to trade for the right to pollute within that. And what will happen over the coming years is that lid will sink, and so the total volume of pollution that's allowed will come down. And what that means is that companies are actually going to have to get more efficient and work out ways to reduce their emissions into the atmosphere.
So not that it is enough to just be doing well on the global stage, but how is Aotearoa doing comparatively internationally?
Well, there are only about 18 countries in the whole world that have actually started to bring down their total emissions, and we're not one of them. But we think that we're probably at about the point of peak emissions, and we're anticipating that they should start to come down in the next couple of years.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.